This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. U.S. President Donald Trump made an unscheduled stop at a U.N. climate summit today. AP Sagar Magani reports.
The president didn't stay long, ducking in for about 15 minutes well after the day-long conference began and did not speak. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the U.N. special climate envoy, noticed.
Hopefully our discussions here will be useful for you when you formulate climate policy.
Drawing laughter from the room. Earlier, UN Chief Antonio Guterres pleaded with world leaders to stop talking about climate change and actually do something.
Nature is angry.
The UN summit came as climate activists blocked major intersections here in Washington, parking a sailboat at one site near the White House. Sagar Magani, Washington.
President Trump is dismissing any talk about impeachment by some Democrats over reports that he tried to pressure Ukraine's president to investigate leading Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. President Trump says the call was about corruption.
Was largely corruption, all of the corruption taking place, was largely the fact that we don't want our people, like Vice President Biden and his son, creating to the corruption already in the Ukraine.
But his admission about the phone call is fueling calls for Democrats to launch impeachment proceedings in Congress. Kenyan officials say at least 7 children have been killed after a classroom collapsed at a school in Nairobi. A government spokesperson says 57 students were taken to the hospital. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan says he wants the United States to restart peace talks with the Afghan Taliban. Khan spoke at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, where he meets with President Trump on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. From Washington, this is VOA News. Meanwhile, dozens of people attending an Afghan wedding have been killed in a raid by the Afghan army on a nearby militant hideout. Reuters' David Doyle reports.
At least 35 people attending an Afghan wedding have been killed by the crossfire of a government raid on a nearby militant hideout. That's according to 2 officials in Helmand province. And it's the second major civilian disaster involving the Afghan and US campaign against militant groups in less than a week. The wedding guests were killed by explosions and gunfire. Authorities say the raid was on a training facility for Taliban suicide bombers. The Taliban said Afghan troops backed by US forces had carried out a night airstrike followed by ground clashes, and that 18 Afghan soldiers had died. Afghanistan's defense ministry said 22 Taliban members were killed and 14 others arrested.
That is Reuters' David Doyle reporting. Almost a week after Israel's election, the country is no closer to knowing who will be the next prime minister. Israel's president held 2 days of consultations with the heads of all of the parties to decide whether to task longtime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu or former Chief of Staff Benny Gantz with forming the government. After 2 days of consultations, 55 members of the 120-seat Knesset said they supported Netanyahu, and 54 supported Gantz. The president has made it clear that he supports a unity government of Netanyahu and Gantz, with whichever smaller parties wish to join Netanyahu favors. Netanyahu favors this option as well. British tour company Thomas Cook has collapsed after failing to secure emergency funding, leaving tens of thousands of vacationers stranded abroad. AP's Karen Chalmers reports.
150,000 British Thomas Cook customers are currently in vacation spots around the globe, and according to the British government, will be part of the largest repatriation effort in Britain's peacetime history. One holidaymaker waiting to board a Thomas Cook flight couldn't hide his disappointment.
We've been saving up for a year for this holiday, you know what I mean? And we've paid all our money, we've paid all the insurance, we've come here on a Gatwick flyer, we've had to pay that, so we're going to lose that money now, and we've got nothing left. It makes it, we're gutted, absolutely gutted.
The company, several months ago, had blamed a slowdown in bookings because of Brexit uncertainty for contributing to its crushing debt burden. Karen Chamas, London.
Indonesian authorities say at least 20 people were killed and dozens more injured as fresh unrest erupted in Indonesia's restive Papua region Monday. Some victims were burned to death in buildings set ablaze by protesters. Papua, on the western half of New Guinea Island, has been gripped by weeks of violent protests fueled by anger over racism. For all the latest news, whenever you want it, please visit us at voanews.com or download the VOA mobile app. In Washington, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Today is Monday, September the 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Coming up, hundreds of thousands of holidaymakers were stranded today after the collapse of the world's oldest travel farm, Thomas Cook.
Britain's Civil Aviation Authority confirmed that Thomas Cook, a 178-year-old company that helped to create the package tour industry, had ceased trading.
And more than 200 world leaders converge in New York for the UN General Assembly amid disagreements over issues such as climate change, Iran, and trade. Those stories and more coming up. Over 200 world leaders are gathering in New York for the United Nations General Assembly and the Summit on Climate Change. The summit comes as scientists warn that much more action is needed to meet targets to mitigate the effects of global warming. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir joins me from New York. Margaret, thank you for joining us. So the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned leaders not to come to the summit with empty promises. Have they actually come with any proposed action plans?
Hi, Jackson. Yes, they have, and that was the rule. If you were going to speak, you had to have something concrete to put on the table. So, for instance, the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, who rarely comes here, made the trip to New York, and she pledged that her country would reduce its carbon emissions by 2030 by 55% compared to its 1990 emissions level, and that they would be carbon neutral by 2050. And we heard from the Indian Prime Minister. His country is has one of the highest levels of air pollution in the world. They rely on oil and on coal, on fossil fuels. And he also spoke about his country's push to expand its use of renewable energies, such as solar power. So they did make concrete pledges. So we'll see if they, you know, are on track to fulfill them as we go along.
Now,
but I have to tell you that the main star of this morning's meeting wasn't the world leaders. It was Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old Swedish climate activist. She had an opportunity to address the adults, and she was very strong in speaking with them. She scolded them. She told them that they've only brought empty words. While people are suffering and dying from the effects of global warming across the planet. And she said that, you're worried about money. That's all you can talk about. But we're in the beginning of a mass extinction. And she scolded the leaders for failing her generation. And the Secretary General backed her up and said that his generation had failed in its responsibility to protect the planet and that must change.
Now, President Trump had been, it had been reported that President Trump was not going to attend the climate summit, but later on he made an unexpected stop. Did he come make any promises? What is generally the U.S. stance on this summit, and do they have any action plans that were advanced?
Right. So President Trump was not expected to attend or speak at the meeting. In order to speak, you must make these pledges. The United States has not come with any pledges. In fact, the opposite. President Trump has said he wants to withdraw the United States from the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. So that has not changed. His position has not changed. But he did come to the room for a few minutes, and he heard a few of the speeches. So he did at least come at a high level. At least the United States was represented at a high level, because there were at least 60 presidents and prime ministers who attended today's climate session.
Thank you very much. That was Margaret Bashir joining us from New York. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Thanks, Jackson.
This weekend, President Donald Trump said that he had raised the issue of former Vice President Joe Biden and Biden's son in a phone call from Ukraine's new leader. The revelations come amidst calls by Democrats for investigations into whether Trump improperly used his office to try to dig up damaging information about a political rival. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden joins me via phone for the latest on this story.
Jeff, thank you very much for joining us here on International Edition. President Trump admitted this weekend to having had conversations with the Ukraine leader regarding former Vice President Biden and his son. Does this revelation change the story in as far as shedding more light on this whistleblower story?
Well, it would seem to give more credence to some of the media reports coming from the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and others that the conversation in question at the heart of this whistleblower complaint that was submitted to the Special Inspector General for the Intelligence Community did involve the call with the president of Ukraine. Beyond that, it raises some questions about whether or not what the president did in perhaps mentioning Biden crosses the line or not. For some lawmakers and for others about whether or not he perhaps committed an impeachable offense. But we also don't know a lot about this call. We don't know specifically beyond the fact that it was a call with Ukraine, and it may have involved Joe Biden, who's former vice president, who's now running for president, and his son. What else was on the call, if anything else was flagged by the whistleblower?
Right. And
there are still lots of questions out there. Even though it seems like the information that's been leaked so far has credence, has merit to it.
Okay. So, and President Trump has intimated that releasing a transcript of the conversation. Is there a hope that he will release it? Given that some reports say that the White House has been actively blocking information from going to congressional oversight committees.
That's a good question. In his comments to the press multiple times yesterday, President Trump mentioned that there's a transcript. Could it be released? He said, I'd love to do it. But, you know, he also said that you have to be a little bit shy about doing that. There are concerns about precedent, about releasing this type of conversation for the president of the United States, whoever it is, to release the transcript of a call, a private call he had with a foreign leader. There are concerns, even from people who are concerned that the president, in this case, President Trump, may have done something very wrong. There are concerns about what type of precedent that sets and whether or not this is something that the White House would be willing to do voluntarily. It was also asked of the president whether or not Ukraine might decide to release its transcript of the call. And he said he assumes that if Ukraine does that, it would be almost exactly the same, if not the same, to whatever transcript the White House might choose to release. But at this point, other than the suggestion that perhaps the White House would do it, there's no indication that anything has moved forward in terms of the White House voluntarily releasing the transcript of the call at question.
And so what would be Congress's next steps? I mean, some congressmen, some members of Congress have said that this was an impeachable offense. How do they proceed from here? What happens going forward?
Well, in the immediacy, we have the Director of National Intelligence, the Acting Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire, who's going to be talking later this week to both the House Intelligence Committee and the Senate Intelligence Committee. Last Friday, the Vice Chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Democrat Mark Warner, said that he expects when the Senate Committee hears from Joseph McGuire, the Acting Director of National Intelligence, that McGuire will clear some of this up. Because remember, part of the issue is that the whistleblower submitted his complaint. The Inspector General for the Intelligence Committee decided that it was both credible and urgent and needed to be forwarded on to Congress. And he gave that recommendation to the Acting Director of National Intelligence, who then has 7 days to transmit that to Congress. And the Acting Director of National Intelligence did not do that. So the lawmakers are going to want to know why the Director of National Intelligence, the Acting Director of National Intelligence right now, disagrees with the Inspector General's assessment that this is credible and urgent, which the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has said they disagree. Why did he not comply with the law as established and turn something over to Congress, or at least notify Congress of the whistleblower complaint? He's going to have to answer those questions as well. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, also a Democrat, Representative Schiff, has been very vocal in terms of his critiques of President Trump. And over the weekend on some of the talk shows, the news talk shows here in the United States, he said that this perhaps, what the president's conduct appears to possibly have been with the president of Ukraine, clearly is perhaps more worrisome than anything else. And he said the president's actions during this call may give lawmakers no further choice but then to proceed with impeachment hearings, although Schiff himself until now has been hesitant, he says, to go down that path. So there will be some potential fireworks in Congress later this week.
VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden.
Malta's Minister for Home Affairs and National Security, Michael Farrugia, says that an agreement has been reached on a redistribution plan for rescued sea migrants. The agreement came after a meeting that brought together internal affairs ministers from Italy, Germany and France. Josephine McKenna is in northern Italy, where she has been following the meeting. She joins me via phone.
Josephine, yep. Today ministers from France, Italy, Malta and Finland met to discuss a deal that would redistribute migrants on these aid ships to some member states. What came out of that meeting?
Well, there's a recognition that Malta and Italy are really the gateway to Europe for migrants who are crossing the Mediterranean. And there's a sense that those two countries have been forced to bear the burden of a wave of arrivals, even though the numbers have not been as extreme this year as they have been in other years. Now, Germany, France and Italy have promised to take a fixed percentage of migrant boat arrivals. This is a tentative agreement. They have to secure cooperation with other European Union countries, and there'll be more talk about this. But I think it's fair to say that this is a significant breakthrough. If they can make this happen and literally share the burden of the numbers that are arriving, then this will take the pressure off Italy and Malta.
Now, there have been reports that Hungary has objections to the plan. What kind of objections do they have?
I saw that Hungary really does oppose a plan like this. As we know, this country has been staunchly opposed to migrant arrivals, and Budapest feels that it has already done enough. So these countries that have reached a tentative agreement today are going to find some opposition from Hungary. Is it possible for them to put an agreement in place where other countries take a percentage of the migrants? That's possible, but it would be interesting to see if Hungary tries to oppose this kind of deal when it does get to Brussels.
Okay, now the talks today focused on migrants that are on the ships. Do they talk about new arrivals, new migrants that will be coming in the future?
Yes, well, this agreement is designed to really look at the number of arrivals, who is going to be coming, and the recognition that there are still many people desperate to get out of Libya. Even though we're seeing migrant arrivals now coming in from Tunisia, so fewer people setting off from the coast of Libya, because those who do are often caught and sent back by the Libyan Coast Guard, or many others just struggling to get out of detention centres in Libya. As we know, they're in very shocking conditions there. So North Africans and indeed sub-Saharan Africans are choosing a different route through Tunisia and coming into Italy that way. And we're waiting to see what might happen in the future there. But so far this year, Italy has seen an increase in what they call phantom boat arrivals, people who are arriving in small vessels offshore. Of the 6,600 that have arrived in Italy this year, more than 5,000, according to local media, have come in on the coast in very small vessels, often undetected.
What has been the reaction from the NGO world towards this agreement?
Well, it's a little early to see much of a reaction so far, but certainly before this summit took place, NGOs were very suspicious about anything coming out of this, anything meaningful. To try and get all these countries to agree is a huge challenge. Sea-Watch, for example, the NGO Sea-Watch, said last Friday that there have been at least 17 emergencies in the last week or so, and the governments involved, the authorities involved, were not doing enough. And at least there were three cases where the Libyan Coast Guard had intervened and literally dragged people back to Libya. And so many of the NGOs are terribly concerned about this and feel that much more needs to be done. We also need to see a clearer agreement between France and Italy. Last week, President Emmanuel Macron and the Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte reached agreement about this new system to redistribute migrants across the EU. But in media are saying that the French government, for example, is still sending up to 70 migrants a day back from France back into Italy. As they try to cross the border into France, they're sent back to Italy. So are these governments willing to really sign an agreement that is meaningful, that makes a difference? We'll have to wait and see.
That was Josephine McKenna. She joined me via phone from northern Italy. Hundreds of thousands of travellers are stranded around the globe after the world's oldest travel farm, Thomas Cook, collapsed. EPI's Karen Chalmers has this story.
Britain's Civil Aviation Authority confirmed that Thomas Cook, a 178-year-old company that helped to create the package tour industry, had ceased trading. It said the firm's four airlines will be grounded and its 21,000 employees in 16 countries, including 9,000 in the UK, will lose their jobs. The collapse of the firm will have sweeping effects across the entire European and North African tourism industry and elsewhere. As hotels worried about being paid and confirmed bookings for high season winter resorts were suddenly in doubt. Karen Chalmers, London.
That was Karen Chalmers, EPI's Karen Chalmers.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers using the National Science Foundation's Green Bank Radio Telescope say they discovered a neutron star that is the most massive ever detected. The researchers found that this neutron star packs a mass 2.17 times that of our Sun into a sphere that's a mere 30 kilometers in diameter. According to the researchers, this newly discovered neutron star is so heavy that if it had just a little more mass, it could have instead formed a black hole. Neutron stars are composed of the highly compressed remains of a giant star that exploded in a Type II supernova. This new discovery is also considered a pulsar, since observers here on Earth can detect the powerful beams of energy they emit from their magnetic poles. This neutron star spins so quickly that it would only take a couple of milliseconds for a full rotation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Had a tough week? Well, this Sunday, let the sweet sound of African music restore and revive you. Hi, everyone. I'm Heather Maxwell. Inside this weekend's edition of Music Time in Africa, vibe to the grooves of Mozambique and Ghana. I just came back from Maputo and am bringing you music from artists I met like Mingush, Matume Zango, Lena Baul, Dilon Jinj, and more. From Ghana, my special guest EL joins me in the studio along with Kwame Ofori all hour long.
Hello, people. What's up?
So tune in this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time. Music Time in Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Britain's opposition Labour Party is expected to hold a series of votes at its party conference today to establish a policy on whether it favours leaving the European Union. From Reuters News, Michelle Hennessy reports.
Britain's Labour Party is headed for a crucial vote on Brexit.
Good morning, Mr. Corbyn. Good morning.
On Monday, you will get the chance to vote on whether to back the Remain camp at a second referendum or defer the decision until after a national election, according to a Reuters Labour source.
You're too excitable.
The party had expected to produce only one motion for approval in Monday's vote. The unexpected decision to put two policies forward is highlighting the internal splits over Brexit in Britain's main opposition party. Polling shows many voters are confused about what exactly a Labour government would do about Brexit. The vote could be a test on whether Labour members are now able to reach a consensus. But It's still possible that both policies could be approved during the vote at the party's annual conference, a move that would further confuse an already tangled web of Brexit proposals.
Mandate to take this country out of the EU.
Meanwhile, the ruling Conservative Party is also looking divided over the issue, with Prime Minister Johnson battling to keep the party together. Labour is hoping to use the chaos engulfing Johnson's government to win control at an early election, which is expected to be called later this year. The latest public poll on Saturday showed the Conservative Party had a comfortable lead over Labour.
This is VOA's International Edition. My name is Jackson Vunganyi.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Egyptian authorities rounded up to 400 people in response to an outbreak of protests against President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi over the weekend, and security forces have stepped up their presence in central Cairo, Human Rights Monitors said on Monday. In a rare public display of dissent, hundreds of people demonstrated in the capital and other cities on Friday in response to calls for protest against alleged government corruption. The protest spread to the Red Sea city of Suez on Saturday. At least 35 civilians attending a wedding party were killed and 13 people were wounded by explosions and gunfire during a raid by Afghan government forces on a nearby militant hideout, two officials in the Thousand Helmand province said on Monday. And the Democratic Republic of the Congo is to introduce a second vaccine next month to combat the Ebola virus, which has killed more than 2,100 people in the country, according to the World Health Organization. This is International Edition.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
The European Union's Brexit negotiator says that it is difficult to see a way to break the Brexit impasse as British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's demand to drop an insurance policy for the Irish border was unacceptable. More than 3 years after the United Kingdom voted by 54 to 48% in a referendum to leave the European Union, the future of Brexit remains uncertain, with options ranging from a turbulent no-deal exit to abandoning the entire endeavor. Hopes of a deal to ease the transition were stoked when Johnson said the shape of an accord was emerging, and European Commission President Juncker said in an agreement was possible. And that's it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Dan Brown, our engineer, John Drayton, thank you so much for listening. You will find in-depth coverage of world events and news at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Have a good day.